Allison Rosen. Hey everyone, it's me, Allison, from Allison Rosen is your new best friend. On Thursday, Gary and Chris got along better than ever.
It's not like I stopped in the middle lane.
No, but there could have been someone coming down the right-hand
lane. I'm aware of my surroundings. I can know if I can make that turn or not.
But the person behind you is not expecting a turn from the middle lane.
It affects their commute in no way if I turn right in front of them.
What if they weren't paying attention? They had to slam on their brakes and you caused a fender bender.
That's their fault. Ooh, I get money. Sweet.
Was there someone behind you?
Yeah. No.
Yes, there was. It was La Brea at 6:55 on a weeknight.
That just happened.
And then on Monday, I sat down with Michael Showalter from The State, Wet Hot American Summer, and a ton of others, and he told this story.
So every time we had a meeting with James Dixon, it was us. It was 11 people and James Dixon. And we would always be in the conference room, and we would be talking about some project or another, and we were talking about something, and I was asking questions, you know, wanting to get specification on one thing or another. And he said, hey, this is show business, not Showalter, okay?
Subscribe to Allison Rosen as your new best friend on iTunes or go to AllisonRosen.com. New episodes every Monday and Thursday. I love you.
Allison's your new best friend.
This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks. More than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/Adam Drew Show. That is audiblepodcast.com/Adam Drew Show.
This is Corolla Digital. Recorded live at Corolla One Studios with Adam Carolla and board-certified physician and addiction medicine specialist, Dr. Drew Pinsky. You're listening to The Adam and Dr. Drew Show.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on. Mandate, get it on. And today we've come to Drew's home turf. We're in the CNN building.
You're in the Sunset Conference Room.
Sunset Conference Room. Yeah, there's a little scheduling thing. Drew's going to the East Coast. I'm going to fucking Dana Point.
You're filming a television show, right?
Yeah, it's
Dana
great.
Dana Point's beautiful. I was married in Dana Point. When the fuck do you have to complain about going to Dana Point?
Because when I was talking to the Catch a Contractor guys, I was like, what houses are you looking at? Oh. They're like, well, we got one by the Hollywood Bowl.
Nice.
And we got another in Glendale.
Nice.
And I said, well, that works for me because I live pretty close to the Hollywood Bowl. And as far as Glendale goes, I work in Glendale. And that's a nice fit. And I have this thing in this town, Drew.
Yeah?
Well, I have a thing. It's called waste. It drives me insane.
Waste of time, waste of energy.
This town is so poorly run.
Yeah.
And the traffic is so just horrific.
Well, by this town, I thought you were somehow referencing the television production town. You mean Los Angeles.
I mean Los Angeles. But also, I swear to you, if we all lived in Dana Point, we'd be shooting in Reseda tomorrow. I have this feeling that further away is better. I at one time, the only victory I've ever had in this department is we were doing a cold opening for a Super Bowl special, me and Jimmy and Cousin Sal, probably 10 or 12 years ago now, probably about 11, 12 years ago. And the deal was we were going this cold opening we were shooting because it was the Raiders were playing in San Diego and for the Super Bowl. What the hell, Raiders? I can't think of Raiders playing. Well, I'll tell you in a second. But God, they got killed too.
Is it a redo of the Raiders Vikings?
Is it 83? Yeah, 1983. I remember Raiders. It well. Jimmy was 9 years old. the Raiders got crushed in the Super Bowl in 2003 or 2002 or whatever it was. But bugging me that I can't remember who kicked the shit out of the Raiders.
San Francisco? No.
No. Oh, well.
Can't be too many teams that would.
You don't have it on your computer. We found 83. If I put in the Super Bowl, pulled up the championship years, not the years they were in. Well, who played in 2002? I'll even accept 2001. Anyway.
So you're doing this cold shoot.
Yeah, Buccaneers. Buccaneers. Thank you. Uh-oh. That's a shaming. He got a mini computer on his hand.
That was just a phone. Computer. Phone.
Yeah. All right. So Buccaneers killed him. What was that? 02? 01. I can't tell if it's the season and the game is played in 02 and it's the 01 season. But right. Anyway. Oh.
Yeah.
So I was right times two. Yeah. All right. So we had to do a cold
open. Are you tired of that? Are you tired of it? You ever get tired of being right?
Never.
Never.
We, oh, shit. I was only half right. So. The deal was we're going to do this cold opening in Tijuana, and Jimmy was just launching his show. It was Pandemonium.
Yeah,
Warren Sapp flew in via helicopter to be his first guest after winning the Super Bowl on a Sunday. I think he launched on a Sunday night. It was a big deal. And we're sitting around logistically trying to figure out how are we going to do this 50-second, maybe 45-second cold opening in Tijuana. And then plan for Jimmy's show and all the other logistics, whatever. And I said, first off, what are we going to Tijuana for? We live in Tijuana.
Right.
Here you are. Los Angeles.
Yeah, just go out the back.
There's a place called Alvera Street, which is just down the street from where we were.
And to be fair, it's more Mexican than Mexico. It's like cartoonish. It's so Mexican.
Yes, that's right. It's a drunken 5-year-old's attempt at Mexico.
Yeah,
it's like we will. You want Mexico? We're going to give you like old Mexico.
It's Casa Bonita.
Yes, that's right. The beautiful house, or something.
No, anyway. It's a reference to South Park.
Either way, we are.
See, Chris got it.
We are going to create now. At the time when they created Alvera Street in, another thing to look up. But when they first. Paving stone was laid. The first cobblestone was laid in Alvera Street in 1959. They did not know that Mexico essentially would spring up around them and dwarf them. The idea was it was going to be a novelty.
No, it was like Knott's Berry Farm, a little old west out in the middle of a metropolis.
Right. But they didn't know that Los Angeles was going to essentially turn into Mexico. Thus... back in the day, if you wanted a churro or some horchata or maybe even an enchilada, you had to head down to Alvera Street.
Yeah.
Now you just walk into the street and you go to anything with a truck and a grill on it, and there you have it. But anyway,
the bacon wrapped hot
1953. Oh my god, what a novelty! I can imagine that conversation, Hubert. We're going down to look at the Mexicans. Would you like to come? Have you seen I don't know if it's Mexican or Mexican, but they have something there called tortillas and some it's a spicy sauce they put on there. Anyway, if you've never seen, they wear huge hats. And they're not a tall people, but they wear a huge hat and play a huge guitar. And if you'd like to go over there and get yourself what they call burrito, which is like a hamburger that's been had the shit kicked out of it and stuffed into a flattened bun, you could try that. They have musical people over there, and they play ranchito music, ranchero.
Well, strangely, they don't. Do they play ranchero down there? I was just thinking, I could if I had a hankering for ranchero, I'd love to be able to go down there and see it. But
no one has a hankering for.
I'd love a little tuba and accordion once in a while, but you never see that. Now you see the big guitars and the trumpets.
Hankering for first off, people have a hankering for ranchero like they have a hankering to have a rusty sprinkler key. Inserted in their rectum and then broken off.
I have a hankering for my prostatectomy.
Yeah.
Got a hankering for
nobody it. Likes fucking ranchero music. But the point is this. It's there to annoy. Either way, I said to Jimmy and Daniel Kelson when they were saying, how the hell are we going to get to Tijuana? I said, it's a 40-second rough opening. Let's go to Alvera Street.
Yeah.
And they said, They did what everyone in Hollywood does. It's just, we're not cutting corners. We want this to look good. And I said, this ain't cutting corners. This is what you call smart and efficient. And they said, does it look like Tijuana?
They've never been there?
They've never been to Alvera Street. Well, again, by the time they got to L.A., every street's Alvera Street.
Right.
So they said, does it look like Tijuana? And I said, have either one of you ever been to Tijuana? And they said, no. And I said, well, then how would you know? Yeah. And how would some kid in Idaho who's 15 watching this MTV special know? And we went over there. We knocked this thing out, I remember, before noon. And then we went across the street to Felipe's and had a French dip sandwich. And I remember thinking, this is about the only time this has ever worked out for me. But yeah. I told the Catch a Contractor guys, great. Hollywood, Glendale, fantastic.
Yeah.
Smash cut to call time, 7 a.m., Dana Point, tomorrow.
Have you done any of these yet? Have you caught anybody yet?
Yes, we've done one episode.
How's it going?
It's going pretty good.
I imagine it must be awesome. I everyone would love to do that, you know? Everyone's had a shitty experience with the contractor. Everyone.
Well, I got to say, is cut and dried as it sounds, there's a fair bit of gray area in a lot of these, you know.
Yes. Well,
there's
that's
some
where the
culpability with the homeowners. I was just speaking to the therapist about this. We finished our first episode yesterday.
Adam just came from the therapist.
That's right.
Yeah.
We finished our first episode yesterday, and we were discussing my inability to enjoy things that other people seem to enjoy. But it's also a positive as well, because...
That wasn't her point, though.
No, but it was my point, which is I don't...
Go ahead.
No, I know it was her point. She said, I said, listen, you know, really, the problem in my life is I go play these sold out shows in Portland and Seattle, and I walk out on stage. I don't get a rush.
Right.
So everything's a pain in the ass, and then the rush. You know what I mean? It's like.
You don't get a rush.
No, it's like doing heroin. You know, everything's a pain in the ass. You got to go get a rig. You got to find it. You know, but then
no high.
You get the sweet juice.
I see.
This is all the expense, all the hassle, I had to blow that dude to get the $80 to get the smack. And then I'm missing the rush part. But she said, are you nervous before you go out on stage? And I said, oh, no. It's nothing across the board, but that's good. Because I'd hate to be pacing around a bundle of nerves. You see what I mean?
No, I do. But I've done a couple of these with you over the years, and you do seem to be in a zone where you at least kind of enjoy the interaction. It's a pain in the ass. I understand.
I'm not going to tell you it's like, you know,
it's not a
it's
rush.
Roofing.
No.
No, I understand intellectually that people paid money to come see.
Wait a minute.
Hold on.
Go ahead.
Okay. All right. We can discuss this.
We can agree to disagree.
No, people paid a healthy ticket price to not see me sit on my ass.
No, I get you're performing and it's and a technical
or sulk about shit.
No,
I'm going to stand up and sweat through my shirt and attempt to make sure that everyone who walks out of that theater, that none of them are going, ugh, well, that was...
I understand.
Could have stayed home and watched Netflix.
I get that, but there does seem to be some... it's certainly not a unenjoyable thing.
Mm-mm.
You don't dislike it.
No.
Yeah. And I would say, and you do dislike the traveling, so there's a difference between the onstage and the traveling.
Yes.
But I would say you would enjoy it the way you enjoy a good conversation. You know, there's something engaging about it, or else it's unpleasant if it's not engaging, right?
Well,
you wouldn't be doing a good job.
There's a kind of a bottom line, which is if when we showed up wherever we were showing up, if you asked me, would I like to go out on stage or would I rather stay behind in the dressing room and talk to Dr. Drew and have Miller Lite, I would stay behind in the dressing room. And if you'd ask me if I would leave my hotel room once I got to the city and go do the show, I'd stay home. I'd stay in my hotel room. So there's a kind of a bottom line.
No, I get that. But I get a feeling you're in a little bit of denial about what happens to you out there. Because I like people. Do you like people?
Yes.
I like engaging.
Oh, wait a minute. I
some people.
I like some people, and I do. No, I like the engagement.
Okay, yeah.
And I like the satisfaction. Yeah.
But you and I did a whole podcast how important satisfaction is. So it is important.
It is, but it's minus the rush or minus the thing.
I would argue with her that I don't have the rush either, but I really enjoy it.
Well, you don't do anything.
No, even when I go by myself. Oh. Forget what I'm with you when I don't do anything.
Oh, okay.
Fuck you, Chris, by the way. So, it's a cover his mouth. He's laughing so hard.
Like a schoolgirl. That's an Asian trait.
He's shaved.
Yeah.
But I enjoy seeing people enjoy themselves. I enjoy the engagement. I enjoy the communal aspect of it. And my sense is I'm standing right next to you. You enjoy the same thing. Maybe even a little more so because – for you, it's kind of a Rubik's Cube. You want to get those punches in of comedy, right? You enjoy solving that. That
ups the difficulty.
Yes, it does. But you can rely on your skill
a little bit. And if I feel like I've been it's a long day of travel, but also a couple things. Doing a show with you, just like doing a podcast with you. I mean, I've had this feeling before where you have to do this podcast and that podcast and this podcast and that podcast. And whenever I see, oh, it's me and Dr. Drew, I just go, oh, all right, that's easy. That's easy because we have such a shorthand. We've logged so many hundreds of hours together that it's just that kind of, I think in your mind, in life, you categorize things. And when people say, you got to be at Dana Point at 7 a.m. tomorrow morning for a call time. You go, oh, what the fuck is Dana Point? Oh, the traffic. Oh, that's a fucking hassle. When they go, oh, you're going to be in Glendale at 10 a.m., you go, oh, that's easy. So I do.
There's also that it's just, I don't know if this is going to be a good analogy or not, but like Mr. Paul Simon, you'll be performing Mr. Garfunkel tomorrow night. You know, you've done 50,000 performances, so go do that again. But the next day, we have a new orchestra for you. And you need to learn this music, and you're going to have to play with the new orchestra. That's a whole different thing. Yes. A whole different deal.
Yeah. I agree. So as Mr. Garfunkel, I would say, or Mr. Simon, I would say that when I know I'm going out with you, it's a little less, I'm going to have to spin these plates and pedal this bike.
It's a little less. Even though you still have to do more, it's a little less.
Right. When I go out to do a podcast on my own, or when I go out to do stand-up, I have a little element of I got to step it up.
Yeah, same thing when I'm by myself too. Yeah. I know I got to carry it. That's it. It's like having whatever, one eye versus two. You got the one eye left. You're going to be careful with that one eye.
I wish though that I experienced the rush, so to speak, of the crowd. You're not wired that way either.
I feel like that would be too much because we do a lot of this. It would be almost unprofessional.
But people claim to experience that.
I experience a little joy, but not a rush.
We did a couple of shows in Seattle. The place was sold out. The audience was amazing. I know you walk out and hear that incredible, thunderous standing applause. And
I go sit down.
You feel.
I feel like I'm going to let them down.
That you feel, you know, it's funny, you feel you're not worthy of it. And I had to be told, by the way, by Dennis Prager, because after I do these shows with him, we'd sometimes get a standing ovation or a big round of applause. And I would do the quick wave and start ushering myself off stage. And he started sort of grabbing me by the arm, and he would sort of say out of the corner of his mouth, stay here. You know, they want you to stay here.
They want you to acknowledge their ovation.
Yeah, they want – this is – it was in
– like if the woman – the soprano came out at the end of the opera and there was a standing ovation. They threw flowers. She scooped out, ran off stage. thank you.
Yeah, and it's funny. I understand it for that. For me, it's like, oh, please sit down. Let's get out of here.
That's
you know?
Me. Please sit down. We're not worth this.
Right. So he would have to like literally kind of grab my arm and go, stay where you are. They want this. He wouldn't say, like, enjoy it. Yeah. He'd just say,
for them.
This is for them. This is what they want.
He's
want you to stand here.
Which is good.
Yeah, it's good. So, where was I?
How was your therapy?
Oh, it was good. I was I was in good form.
Mm-hmm. You came in here. I before the mics heated up, I thanked you for coming all the way the fuck out here and doing this, and you gave me the, you should be thanking me. But it was a very, but I must tell you, it was a very present.
Oh, you felt like I'd been tuned
like,
in.
Like you were tuned in, like very present. Like I, you know, I thought, oh, therapy must have been really good, connected.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I cannot deny people their vibe or their feeling because.
Where are you going with this?
No, what I remember when you said thanks for coming in and doing this. What happened was is Drew and I were trying to schedule some stuff. It ended up scheduling it for later tonight. I knew that I'd have this crazy early morning with tons of driving and stuff like that, and it ended up working out. But my not. By the way. I don't know why I did that. I was conscious of that nod I gave you.
Yeah.
But here's what I'm saying. Everything
it was uncomfortably long. It was uncomfortably like, uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Everything. That's right. Well, here's what I mean. I don't think everyone needs to go, oh, no problem, no problem, no problem. And not everyone. See, I think there's a lot.
No, that's the point. I thought it was very clear and responsive.
People get
You didn't defend. You didn't whatever. You're just present and said, yeah, that's right. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Well, what I was trying to convey was this. What I was trying to convey was, I think we do too much of either one of two modes, and you can tell me. There's a lot of. Thank you for doing this. Oh, it's nothing. It's nothing. Oh, it's nothing. It's no problem. It's no problem. It's no problem. And then there's the other one, which I experienced too, which is, oh, was the traffic bad?
Yeah.
I mean, I had to sit in traffic and, which is basically you owe me.
No.
I've dealt a lot of this with this.
Both are sort of disconnected, insincere, defensive.
Right.
And you came out of therapy, like connected up, and so you could be sincere and for real.
Yeah, I don't know. But I don't think I would have said, oh, you owe me beforehand.
No, that's not what you said.
No, no. I wouldn't have had a one or the other if I'd not come from therapy.
Oh, I think you would have ignored me. You just ignored me. You would have just ignored me. You would have just gone on. When are we starting this thing? Let's go. Let's get it on.
Right.
You would have ignored me.
All right, but I gave you a...
You gave me a real...
Yes, I drove out of my way, but that's fine.
Yeah. Well, you gave me a... No, it was very... It was a little more than that, but it was good. Mm-hmm. It was like, yes, I drove out of my way, and you should be thankful. There's a little bit of you should be thankful, but it's okay.
Yeah. Well, that's I like it that way.
Yeah, it's all right.
I went to...
Noticed it. It was good.
Yeah. All right.
It was good for you?
I loved it. I'm still in my refractory period. Yeah. I had a... basically this crazy episode of the...
To catch him.
No. Oh, what I didn't explain to you about that was...
Okay, hold on.
Okay.
There's something... Some crazy shit just happened in this room where the video conference thing just kicked in, and now the TVs are turning on.
Okay.
Here's what we're going to do.
We're in the conference room at CNN.
Yeah, this is CNN Central, and Gary hit something, or on my elbow hit something. Before we go any further, I want to give a little shout-out to our friends at Audible.
Mm.
This podcast has been brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks, 150,000 downloadable titles, all types of literature, and many New York Times bestsellers. Audible's offering our listeners free audiobook.
Ooh.
Again, this thing is amazing. Listening to – you can listen to Not Taco Bell material. You can listen to The Mirror Effect. It's all kinds of – whatever you like, whatever you're into, it's all there at Audible. It's a great service. For a free Audible book of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/AdamDrewShow. That is audiblepodcast.com/AdamDrewShow.
Nick Offerman's book I've been listening to. It's really, really good.
Oh, yeah?
A lot of
what's it about?
It's growing up sort of on a farm and just the value of hard work
And
focus and all the stuff we always talk about.
Grit.
Just to digress a little bit. Or to get back to a subject. So we finish our first episode. And one guy who was one of the lead guys on the shoot, I don't know if he was the, associate producer, whatever, one of the guy. Anyway, he said, down to whatever's cantina for drinks. I remember he put this out. And I remember thinking, what are we going out drinking for? And then it was about 4 or 5 in the afternoon. And then he said, when we wrapped it up, he said, well, that's our first episode in the can of the new series, you know. And I remember everyone kind of going, all right, you know, see you at the cantina kind of thing. And I remember first I was like confused, like, so what? What are we doing? And then my next impulse was, I got to get the fuck out of here, which is my impulse, which is, I got to go, I got to go, I got to go. I got to get home. Maybe I can get a little nap. I can wrestle with the kids, skip my rope, then I'll go do the podcast. But it had to dawn on me that people had finished their first episode of their new television series, and they wanted to go out and celebrate that achievement.
Yeah, I don't dig that either.
I don't dig it. I'm almost confused by it, which is a sad state of affairs in a weird way.
Well, you could understand if you just wanted Emmy, you want to go out and do stuff. But to, like, Joe, we just finished an episode of a series. Let's keep at the wheel.
That's you and me. Yeah. But I think most people feel like, first off, we got this series picked up. So they're excited about the fact that they were able to have that achievement of having the thing picked up. And then the next thing is well, now it's come to fruition. We finished our first episode. I'm the same way as you. I don't want to – I'm not here to be Ebenezer Scrooge, though. I mean, if people feel like they want to go out and have a beer after doing their first episode, I'm all for it. I'm just probably not going to be there.
Are they younger people? I wonder if younger...
In general, just have some blood in their veins.
You get older, you learn that things that just never end. Just keep moving. You know, don't celebrate too much.
Well, that's what you and I have learned, that there's things never end, or then they always end, or whatever it is. Yeah, but either way, just keep moving. Yeah. But that was my thing of, I wanted just to keep moving. I just wanted to hustle home.
Well, it's interesting. Maybe we made a mistake because our whole lives are geared around that. That's why we don't have time to take. Oh, Chris, look at that. He's like, you know, you got to celebrate. That's what Chris Mexapata is saying. But where our whole lives roll, where there's no time to take that beat and celebrate and acknowledge. And so there might be a psychological component to, you know, if you had a priority in enjoying.
I just have this feeling of, if I'm involved with it, how great can it be? Like,
mine's a little different. Mine's like, if I did it, anybody can do it.
Well,
I
have that with certain things. I don't have that way. I don't have that with shows where you have to have a wealth of knowledge about carpentry and comedy, because that I know only I can do, but it still doesn't mean anything to me.
Right.
That's the difference. And all I ever want to do is sort of get on to the next thing. And I just wonder, it's interesting because one of the things I was talking about with the therapist is being wired, and I just said it yesterday when I was speaking to somebody. I said, you know, the calmest people in the world are either the race car drivers or the cage fighters. They're calm. They're very low key people, and they have to be that way. Otherwise, they would explode when they got into their environment. Mm. When they shut the cage gate of the octagon, they'd go off like pyrotechnics. Mm-hmm. They'd go off like Piccolo Pete's, and or climbed into the cockpit of their race car. They'd go off.
Yeah.
And you can't go off in that environment, because if you go off in that environment,
you'd die.
You could die, or you could lose your composure, form, whatever, all kind of goes out the window. And also, there's an energy thing, which is...
Well, you need to conserve.
You think about lighting off, a fountain.
Yeah.
Do kids have fountains these days?
They do. You can't buy them in most cities anymore, but yes.
It's crazy that there's one fountain you can drown in and one fountain you can burn alive. As a matter of fact, if you sat too close to one fountain, you'd be dying for the next fountain.
You'd wish for the next
fountain. Right. But it's a stick.
Strangely, not the other way around.
Right. It's a stick that shoots fire, and it's great for about 11 seconds, and then it's completely gone.
Yeah.
And I don't know if – I think they called them Piccolo Pete's back in the day.
Those little whistling –
Yeah, I would always tell my students when I was boxing, don't go off. You go off like Piccolo Pete. You'll be good for about 10 seconds, and then you'll be done.
Sec, what you do with those Piccolo Petes? You'd squeeze them in the middle with some pliers,
right?
Right, and they'd explode after whistling for a while.
Yeah, yeah, that was way to up the ante. That was basically a speedball. That was taking the coke and mixing it with heroin. Yeah, so Van Nuys speedball sounds like a gay move. So. I always feel that guys that do that for a living can't afford to go off that way because the bell would ring, they'd be going bananas for 30 seconds, and then they just completely run out.
Yeah.
And so they emotionally have to be wired in such a way where they don't get that high, but they don't get that low either.
We also, though, remember Dr. Porges and I, Gary, if you could look for the episode number where Dr. Porges and I deconstruct the Corolla biology. Now, people like that one. We talk about your hyper parasympathetic input.
I was told, though, by the therapist moments ago that this probably makes you confused why other people get so much enjoyment out of what you consider to be almost nothing.
Yes.
And I know you must walk around this way, or I think you do. I walk around all day where people go, this dog, you see this dog? I just got this sweater for this dog. Isn't it amazing? Doesn't she look amazing? So how cute is that sweater on this dog? And I'm just thinking the whole time, I want to light myself on fire. Find me a Piccolo Pete. I want to kick the dog. I want to leave. Like, how can you? Who cares? What do you care? You got a dog. You got a fucking sweater for your dog.
Let's go back to the cantina episode. Going to the cantina after the first episode was completed. That was confusing to you to understand why people would want to enjoy, celebrate, take a moment.
When it's stuff that I would theoretically like. Like I said to...
By the way, it's episode 90 with Dr. Porges deconstructing Adam. But go ahead, you said?
I said to the therapist, even when people say to me, hey man, we're going out to Willow Springs with the Mustang Club, and we're going to do some laps around Willow Springs in this 5.0 Mustang, and my question would be, is it a race? Oh, no. People are just going out,
just enjoy it,
turning some hot laps and flogging their car around the track. And then my thing would be like, is everyone in fire suits and harnesses and roll cages? No, just street cars, but out, you know, having a good time. You know, I'd be like, oh, it doesn't sound like anything to me. I need a race.
Yeah,
like,
I'm the same
I want
way.
Something going on. You know,
to like me, it's similar to golf.
Yeah, golf is the...
I can't understand that.
That's
a mystery. Like to me, that's like some sort of undecipherable hieroglyphics. Like, what is that? It's like, I have no idea.
Yeah.
What are they doing?
Well, never run for office. But my feeling is what are they doing? And then I know what they're doing, and I don't even want to discourage what they're doing, but I get a lot of, hey, man, want to join us? That sounds like a good time. And I'm just like, no, I've no... It doesn't feel like.
I think that's a little different. I think that's a little different than what your therapist was talking about.
Well, a little different. It probably.
I think you probably she was talking about you people finding enjoyment or joy in accomplishments or experiences. It's a little different.
No, she was also just saying. Well, she was just kind of saying like when I was at the track, my car broke and I ended up in the infield with a woman who was probably 72 who I had to walk like from the infield into the infield's timing, whatever the timing shack. It's not a shack, it's a big structure in the middle of the infield because you couldn't cross the track. My car broke early in the race and I walked into this thing and I found myself just sort of sitting there next to some people who were in front of some TV screens and radios and stuff like that. And the one woman, they're all volunteers, they're all nice people. She's like, let me show you my baby. And she pulls out one of those flip photo things, like the ones that hold all the photos. And, you know, it's this
actual
69 Mustang, whatever, notchback or 69 Mustang. I don't know if they had notchbacks in 69, but anyway, it's like a 69 Mustang. You know, it's a car that they made 4.2 million of, you know? And she's like, I got it in high school, you know? And I'm like, yeah, still have it to this day. 271,000 miles on it. Or maybe it was literally coming up on a, you know, million miles or whatever it was. Rebuilt the engine three times, the transmission twice. Mustang Monthly is going to do a story on me on this. And then she's showing me pictures of, I recently had it painted, and I'm just sitting there looking at it, and this is, she's in love with this goddamn car.
Yeah, but you have a thing with your cars too.
I don't carry pictures of the $4,000 cars around with me and bore the shit out of people. I do like, yes, I do. It's Paul Newman's race car. I think it's really cool. Yeah. I don't have any pictures of it on me. Right. You know what I mean? But, and I'm not trying to be a fucking snob. I know it sounds like I'm trying to be a snob, but this is something that they made 4 million units of.
Yeah, I get it.
You got it in high school. I got a car shortly after high school. Guess where it is? Who the fuck knows? I've moved on with my life,
I
haven't built my life around this $5,000 Mustang.
But this reminds me of the time that you told me you didn't like being sort of noticed, called out. Right? You know what I mean?
Yes.
The first time I saw this, remember the first time I witnessed this when we were pitching? No, we were in sales meetings for Loveline, the Fox TV show. We were in Las Vegas at a NAPPE convention.
That's where all the syndicated shows show up. And
yeah, we were originally a syndicated. We weren't on MTV. We were being sold over the country. It's a long story. And we were with some sales guys or something.
Probably. In a room like this.
It was like a tent, it felt like, or something weird.
There was this whole process. I don't know if they still have it. I bet they do. It's like over there's the Hercules tent, and over there's, you know, Shira, Lord of the Jungle's tent, and all the other shitty syndicated shows that they try to sell. And they literally explain, like, well, Dr. Drew is a board-certified physician, and his recognition level, and when, you know, women 18 to 34, and Adam Carolla is blah, 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 blah. And you try to pitch him the show.
Yeah.
You do a little dog and pony for him, and you try to sell the syndicators the show. And they're like, well, do we want Shira, Lord of the Jungle, or do we want these assholes? And we got our show sold in, like, 96% of the country or something insane. But anyway.
Yeah. Then canceled. But some guy goes, hey, Adam, you know Steve Cahila.
Right.
And you were like, Steve Cahila? You were like disturbed. They're like, it was like somebody shot you. And you're like, yeah, I do. But you like didn't know how to respond. You didn't want to be like noticed. It was a very interesting thing to watch.
Yes.
I'll not forget it.
That was
1996.
Yeah.
1995.
I've forgotten about it. But yeah, I didn't like being.
And I was like, what was that? What was the problem? And you're like, explain it to me then.
I hate it. I've had it today. Somebody went, hey, we have a mutual friend. I always go, oh, shit. You know why?
Why?
It always falls under the heading of what's in it for me.
It doesn't feel like the whole story, though.
How could
this be good, I guess?
What could come of this?
Right.
Like, yeah, his name is Steve Cahila. I know he owes you $500, and he asked me to pay it to you. Like, that's never how the story ends. It's more like, oh, yeah, I came in his sister's hair. I mean, that's how these stories go.
Was that because you have so much shit laying around out there, so many carcasses in North Hollywood that you're afraid some of them are going to get dug up? Is that the problem?
All you have to have is, like, two carcasses for your 82 good deeds.
I know.
If someone goes, hey, let's talk, you go, oh, shit, here comes a carcass. Number one. No. Number two, I feel like, first off, every time somebody goes, hey, there's somebody who knows you and I know him, it's right up there with, hey, you're left-handed? Oh, boy, here comes the worst. This is going to be the worst 13 seconds of my life. Here we go. I'm left-handed, too. You know, they say, do you know that 81% of Nobel award-winning scientists are left-handed? I'll bet you didn't know that. You know what percentage of Mensa members are actually left-handed? Now, at some point, I have to decide whether I want to fucking cut this conversation off or what it's going to be. This is the, you're left-handed, you're a Gemini. When I hear, I know no good. No good can ever come of this conversation. There will be nothing,
nothing in it for you.
And it'll never come around to anything.
Right.
You know who else was left-handed? I'll tell you who. Paul Newman's head mechanic. The guy who worked on the 85 IMSA car. That's right. Gene Crow. Left-handed. I knew him well. Let me show you some pictures of the engines he worked on. It's never going that way. It's going to go back to them, and we're going to discuss how we're both creative, except for they work at a place that sells miniature ponds.
Is that where Steve works? You had any contact with Steve Cahill ever since that day?
Steve actually is a good guy, and I met him at the Groundlings many years ago.
Ah.
He's done a little work. You've seen him around. Mm. And his sister's kind of a big muckety-muck over at DreamWorks, I think, or Ron Howard's company.
Same last name now or something different?
It's a good question.
I wonder if she got rid of that as quick as she could.
Trying to figure that one out. But yeah, it was just a room of people, and now I was going to go engage with this guy.
See,
about
if we've been doing that today, you could have just done a go to meeting instead of go to Las
man.
Vegas.
Oh, man. I could be sitting in my car with the foil up with the windows over the windows. Yep, go to meeting, baby. You need go to meeting. We use these guys all the time whenever we talk to the clients, and this thing of pulling the stuff up and sharing the same screen. And I even like the part where the person who's talking is highlighted. I wish we had a little more of that in real life.
Yeah,
I've had a lot of moments in my life where people were talking at the same time, and I've had to actually stop them and go, "Excuse me, this person is trying to talk. You can't just talk
at the same
simultaneously.
Time.
Yeah. It's weird that people are able to.
That's why you refuse to come on my HL intro, even though you're here. We could just
excuse
slip
me.
You right in.
Excuse me. Excuse me. Excuse me. All right. Go to meeting. You can start and attend a meeting if you like. You can use a Mac, you can use a PC, smartphone, or you can use a tablet. Start hosting meetings in seconds from your computer, your mobile device, and you can sign up for 30 days free. That's right. Try it out for free. No credit card required. Just go to GoToMeeting. Visit GoToMeeting.com. Click on the Try It Free button. Use the promo code Adam. That is GoToMeeting.com. Promo code Adam. Meeting is believing. All right. Drew, I know you're on a schedule, so
yes,
we're going to wrap this
crazy
one up. I want to thank everyone for listening. Tell them if you're tell a friend, go to the website, click through the Amazon banner. All that good stuff. What else? PayPal. That's right. Subscribe, baby. You want to show a little love to the good doctor and myself, carving time out of our valuable day to share our pearls of wisdom and knowledge with you? Well, it's good juju to give back. So, until next time. Juju. Until next time. I'm Carl for Dr. Drew, Chris Max Pata, Gary Haftard saying mahalo.
This is Corolla Digital.